On the front of the bulletin carries this verse, or these verses. Jesus cried with a loud voice and gave up the ghost. And when the centurion who stood over against him saw that he so cried out and gave up the ghost, he said, "Truly, this man was the Son of God." As we've been going through the Gospel of Mark in our services of worship this past week, we read Mark 11 last Sunday as part of Palm Sunday, and we read Mark last night during the Last Supper. I have been thinking about the various things that Mark includes that are not included elsewhere. Most of the crucifixion is carried and told by Mark and Matthew and Luke. There's nothing unique, or very little unique, about Mark's gospel, except for these words from the centurion. When we read it in Matthew 54, when the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and all that had happened, they were terrified and exclaimed, "Surely he was the Son of God." Similar, but not the same. Luke, on the other hand, writes this in verse 47 of chapter 23. The centurion, seeing what had happened, praised God and said, "Surely this was a righteous man." Now, what did he say? Did he say, "Surely he's the Son of God"? Did he say, "Surely he was a righteous man"? Or did he say both of those things? And Mark hears, "Surely this man was the Son of God." And I think that there is continuity. There is some not inconsistencies, but compatibilities, where all the words are said in different orders, different emphases. What I want to focus on as we look at this passage of Scripture is what the centurion said and what it means. The centurion, according to Luke, said this was a righteous man. In Matthew, he says he's the Son of God. And in Mark, he says, "Surely this man was the Son of God." Let's look at that phrase. Surely this man, this righteous man, this man who did what was right, was the Son of God. If we look at this passage, we recognize the first few words, "Surely this man." Jesus was a man. He was treated like any other man. Verse 29, which we read, they hurled insults at him, shaking their heads. That was the custom of the day. Crucifixion was meant to humiliate, even more so to dehumanize. And there are accounts that it was for public display, but it was not something you took your children to. That the language and the expression and the carnage was not for children. And no one said, oh, wait, this is God incarnate. We shouldn't be acting this way. No, they saw someone on the cross and they treated him like a man or less than a man. Even those who knew better, Mark 15:31. The chief priests and the teachers of the law mocked him among themselves. The religious leaders. He claimed he was the Christ. They don't investigate. They look at him as a common criminal, treated like anybody else. They don't see him as divine. Mark 15:32. Those crucified with him also heaped insults on him. They saw him as an equal. Everyone saw him as an equal. Even the disciples saw him as an equal. He had limitations, just like any other man. He was subject to weakness. And we see this from Mark's account in verse 21. Certain man from Cyrene, Simon, the father of Alexander and Rufus, was passing by on his way into the country. And they forced him to carry the cross. Why? Because Jesus was physically unable to continue on. We see by extension that he grew thirsty. One of the other gospel accounts says that Jesus says, I thirst. Mark doesn't say that, but he does say in two separate occasions that someone comes to him with wine vinegar, both at the beginning of the crucifixion and toward the end, especially verse 36. Someone ran, filled a sponge with wine vinegar, and put it on a staff and offered it to Jesus to drink. The other gospel writers say he did, in fact, drink. He got thirsty. And we know through the gospel accounts that he did all sorts of things that human beings do. He slept. He ate. He cried. He was hurt. He bled. He mourned. And ultimately he dies like any other man. Mark 15:37. With a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last. He stopped breathing. His heart stopped. It wasn't as if he disappeared. It wasn't as if he was suddenly turned into dust. It wasn't as if he suddenly sprouted wings and flew off the cross. His heart stopped. His lungs stopped. He stopped breathing. If he was hooked up to machines, there would be a flat line. The respirator would stop climbing and dropping. He breathed his last. His death was as any other human being's death. Understandably, in the most inhuman kind of way, the instrument of his death was horrible. But the actual death was absolutely human. He stopped breathing. He stopped. His heart stopped pumping. His brain stopped waving. And if there's nothing else that the cross does, but the cross does many things, the cross reveals that Jesus was a man. And so the centurion was right, and Luke was right. Surely this man, surely this was a righteous man. But the cross also reveals the divine nature of God, of Jesus. Surely this was the Son of God. If we were to look up the phrase Son of God in the Gospel of Mark, it would come up twice. One at the very beginning and one in chapter 3. Mark 1:1 says this: "The beginning of the good news about Jesus the Messiah, the Son of God." Mark 3:11 says, "Whenever the impure spirits saw him, they fell down before him and cried out, 'You are the Son of God.'" What, according to Mark, is a mystery to us as human beings was known in the spiritual realms. When impure spirits saw Jesus, they knew he was the Son of God. Only after the crucifixion, when Mark is writing this eyewitness account from history, does he write that this is the good news about Jesus the Messiah, the Son of God. When Mark records the two times that God speaks in an audible voice in his gospel, what does he say? What does God say? Mark 1:11. "A voice came from heaven, 'You are my Son, whom I love, with whom you I am well pleased.'" Now it is likely that when Jesus was baptized, no one but Jesus heard what God had said. But Mark records, whether it's through what Jesus said in a private moment or what the Spirit inspired Mark to say, that God says that to Jesus, "You are my Son." Mark 9:7, similar circumstance. They're on the Mount of Transfiguration, and Peter, James, and John are there. And a cloud appears and covers them, and a voice came from the cloud, "This is my Son, whom I love. Listen to him." Peter, James, and John heard that Jesus is the Son of God. But until now, until this moment, until the centurion says it, it's all from the heavenly realm. It is impure spirits that say that Jesus is the Son of God. It is God himself who is saying Jesus is the Son of God. But now, the centurion, seeing the way that he dies, calls him. The Son of God. And perhaps that has to do with what Mark records as the words of Jesus. There are seven things that Jesus says on the cross, and Mark records one. He records, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" It's the only thing that Mark thinks is important that Jesus said. It is finished, not important. And I'll tell you why in a minute. I thirst, not important. Today you'll be with me in paradise, not important. Mother, receive your son. Son, receive your mother. Not important. The first verse of Psalm 22. That's what's important. Maybe the centurion knew what it meant. Maybe the Holy Spirit inspired him to reflect on what he was saying, and in a moment of clarity, he understood. But Psalm 22:1 is not a cry of desperation, a cry of desertion. It is a common practice among religious teachers of Jesus' day to quote the first verse, the first thought. And by doing so, it would be an allusion to the entirety. There's a fancy word, that figure of speech, which means you refer to a part and it represents the whole. And I forget what that is, but that's what this is. And when Jesus says, my God, why have you forsaken me? He's not crying out and saying, God, where are you? He's reminding them of the conclusion of Psalm 22, which says, verses 27 to 31 of Psalm 22, all the ends of the earth will remember and turn to the Lord, and all the families of the nations will bow down before him, for dominion belongs to the Lord, and he rules over the nations. All the rich of the earth will feast and worship. All will go down to the dust. Who go down to the dust will kneel before him. Those who cannot keep themselves alive. Posterity will serve him. Future generations will be told about the Lord. They will proclaim his righteousness, declaring to a people yet unborn, he has done it. Or as the Greek would say, tetelestai, it is finished. Somehow, I believe the centurion heard, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, and he knew, this is the Lord. This is the Messiah. This is the Son of God. The cross reveals that Jesus was fully God. The cross finally reveals the eternal nature of Jesus. Just very quickly, the centurion was responding to what he observed, and so he remarked who Jesus was, and as far as he knew, this was the end. This man was the Son of God. As he stood at the foot of the cross, he recognized a special man had passed. But that's not all that's going on at that moment. Mark 15:38 tells us that the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The access that the Jews were refused to the presence of God, the Holy of Holies, has now been opened, and that all who seek the presence of God can approach. No longer is there a curtain. No longer is there a dividing line. And as a picturesque way of symbolizing it, the curtain tears from top to bottom. And some have said that it is God's initiative. Maybe. Could simply be gravity that the sides of the curtain fell from top to bottom and it split from top to bottom? I don't know. But if it were torn from bottom to top, people would say, oh, that's man's way of gaining access. So we can take it as God's initiative. Ultimately, the cross reveals a permanence. That the one who is fully human and fully divine has restored our relationship with God and has made that relationship available to everyone. So as we gather this Good Friday, I would ask that you would hear these words again. Surely this man was the Son of God. And we have insight through Mark that surely this man is the Son of God. This man who died for you is the Son of God. Take a moment and linger here at the cross and witness the humanity of Jesus dying for us. Take a moment and linger here at the cross and witness the divinity of Jesus finishing the work He was sent by the Father to accomplish. Take a moment and linger here at the cross and witness the permanence of Jesus' sacrifice. For He has destroyed the dividing wall between God and sinful creation. This man who died for you is the Son of God. Let's spend just a moment.